And I would like to speak today about Sukkot in a kind of global setting. The Torah tells us in Parshat Emor, it's the first source on your sheets, that Basukkot Teshvu Shivat Yamim. Pasuk says, Lama'an Yedu Dorotechem Ki Basukkot Hoshavti Et Bnei Yisrael Bohotzi'i Otam Me'eretz Mitzrayim Ani Hashem Elokechem. The reason why we sit in a sukkah, that you're going to sit in a sukkah, that we're going to live in a sukkah, teishvu kein taduru, is a mitzvah min haTorah, because lema'an yedu dorotechem, ki basukot hoshavti et b'nei Yisrael, because I, Hashem, set you, caused you to dwell, enabled you to dwell in sukkot, behotzi'i otam me'eretz Mitzrayim, ani Hashem elokechem. And there's a lot of halachot that are related to Lema'an Yedu Dorotechem. So for example, those of you who are going to Neyot Kedumim are going to see a sukkah that was built based on the dimensions of the Mishnah in Masechet Sukkah that is more than 20 amot high. In the minimal, and that's Pasul. It's Pasul. And that is, at the minimum, that's a 30 feet tall sukkah, a three-story sukkah. You'll see it with your own eyes if you've signed up for Neyot Kedumim. And, anyway, and the reason for that is because when I go into a sukkah, my eye, or anywhere, my eye gets drawn up somewhat, but my eye does not get drawn up 20 amos. And I'm not even sure where I am. I'm in a building, but I don't see the sukkah, and the ikar of a sukkah is the schach, because the walls can be built out of anything. But the schach has to be the kosher schach, the three conditions in Masechet Sukkah, so my eye is not really drawn in that direction. Sure, if someone says, hey, take a look, but in the natural order of events, I walk in, I sit down, and I leave, I don't pay attention to the sukkah. And we need Lema'an Yedu Dorotechem. I need to know that I'm sitting in a sukkah. And that is why we say, Teshvu Ke'en Taduru, Ke'en with an ayin. That's why I have to live Basukot Teshvu Shivat Yamim. I have to sit in a sukkah, live in a sukkah, dwell in a sukkah, Ke'en Taduru. The way I live, I eat during the rest of the year in my house, okay, I'll eat in the sukkah. I sleep, and there's certain conditions, of course, in my house the rest of the year. In the sukkah, I sleep outside. I schmooze in my sukkah. I schmooze in the house. I schmooze in the sukkah. I remember, is it 3 years ago that Gilad Shalit was freed? Or two? Is it 2 years ago? It was over Sukkot. And I remember taking my laptop into the sukkah, and we're all gathered around, watching live him coming out in the sukkah. Like in the living room, there is no living room. The living room is called the sukkah. So we have a lot of halachot, and we're going to discuss those a little bit more in a moment. Lema'an yedu dorotechem ki basukot hoshavti et b'nei Yisrael b'hotziotam me'eretz Mitzrayim. Now there's a Gemara, which is the next source, Masechet Sukkah daf yud aleph amud bet, which quotes a braita. And the braita says as follows, Tanya, ki basukot hoshavti et b'nei Yisrael, ananei kavod hayu divrei Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer tells us, and by the way, the Gemara itself, I'm just as a footnote, is unclear whether the two shitot are switched, whether the first opinion is Rabbi Akiva and the second is Rabbi Eliezer, or the first is Rabbi Eliezer, second is Rabbi Akiva. We're going to go we're talking about the idea, not necessarily the person. So we're going to call them Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva as they're quoted here. Anyway, so Rabbi Eliezer says, which is the way we normally understand the Chag, and it makes sense for us to do so, as we'll see in a moment, that when we say Sukkot, we're talking about Anane Kavod, the Ananim that surrounded Bnei Yisrael when we walked in the desert for 40 years. They surrounded us on all sides, up, down, and far ahead, right? The seven Ananim. That's Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Sukkot Mamash Asu Lahem. Rabbi Akiva says that he made regular, plain old Sukkot. Now, I'm not sure that there was canvas, and there was an unrollable schach, but it was Sukkot Mamash. And so a question that we're going to be dealing with for the entire shiur is trying to understand Rabbi Akiva's position, who says that our chag, for 7 days, and not Shmini Atzeret. Shmini Atzeret is not part of Sukkot. It's Pazar Kashav, 6 ways that Shmini Atzeret is a separate chag completely. People who hold 2 days and people in Chutz Laretz have a hard time differentiating, but it's a separate chag completely. We don't sleep in the sukkah on Shmini Atzeret. But for 7 days, I understand Rabbi Eliezer. But Rabbi Akiva wants me to celebrate Sukkot because Hashem built regular, plain old Sukkot mamash in the desert. Again, Rabbi Eliezer, I understand. I am commemorating these literally, literally miraculous, supernatural ananei kavod. The ground beneath me smoothed out. No hills, no valleys. No rocks. No stubbed toes. No broken glass. No worn out shoes. No worn out clothing. Ananim around me. Enemies. Shoot an arrow, I would never know it. Gets absorbed. Can you imagine walking in the desert? I don't care about anything. And the ananim above me. No sun beating down. I'm sure there was a sun, but no, painful in the desert. You're in the desert that 3 days in the desert, you can't survive. And we're talking about 2 million people in the desert for not 3 days and not 3 weeks and not 3 months and not 3 years and not even 3 decades, but 40 years. We're sitting in the midbar, walking, calm, easy, nobody bothers us, and a seventh Anan telling me where to go. 3,500 years before Waze is invented, we don't need a GPS, we know where to go, end of story. And at night, in the day, we can follow. That Sukkot, that Chag HaSukkot, I can understand. That Chag HaSukkot, I can understand. The Chag that I don't understand is Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says Sukkot Mamash. So we leave, we go in the desert. And by the way, did Hashem build the sukkahs for us? We built the sukkahs. He provided, you'll remember the Rashi, provided the wood, he provided the schach. I understand that. But which don't exist in the desert. But I had to chop, and I had to, just like I'm going to have to do today and tomorrow, and I'm waiting for one of my kids to come home from yeshiva, so you know I need an extra pair of hands, and he's bringing a friend, so Baruch Hashem, but it's hot. I heard a story about Rabbi Ruderman Zeichet Tzadik Livracha, the Rosh Yeshiva of Ner Yisrael. I was just quoting this to a couple people in the car on the way home on Thursday night. We leave late Thursday nights. I don't always remember everything that happens in the car, especially when I'm driving, but that's just a joke. If you're tired, you should have someone else drive. I shouldn't joke with new drivers. Anyway, but I just recall the story of Rabbi Ruderman. I used to go to Ner Yisrael for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, even when I was in high school. Very powerful davening, the second most powerful davening, third most powerful davening. He also spent 1 3-day Rosh Hashanah in the army, actually. I never told you that story. I drew a lot. And I was one of 30 people that stayed in for a 3-day Rosh Hashanah where we were awake all night, guarding a border, mamish all night. Drove back to the base in the morning, faces covered in dust because we were driving in open jeeps. We literally went from staying awake all night, washing our faces, and davening Rosh Hashanah, and then sleeping the rest of the day. Sleeping in the middle of the heat was so hot. It was middle of nowhere, and trying to sleep in the middle of the day, it was very hot, and there were flies everywhere. So you would wake up all the time because a fly would be on you. So people would, it's a very morbid scene because we all have to do guard duty. So I would have to wake up at 3 in the afternoon, let's say, and watching, you know, I would watch 29 friends basically sleeping with white sheets over their entire body. Because we didn't want on our face either, flies on our face. They would sleep with these white sheets. It's a very, very hard chag and very homesick and all, and physically challenging, but really, really, really powerful davening. Because of those 30, about 10 or 12 made a minyan, and it was really, really, really powerful. Anyway, so Ner Yisrael was among my more powerful Rosh Hashanah experiences, and of course, Shalvim is up there also number one. But and Rabbi Ruderman, Zeichet Tzadik Livracha, Rosh Yeshiva of Ner Yisrael, they say about him that he was very not handy. He was very not handy. He had two left hands, and he was a righty, and all that stuff. And the story was that every single Sukkot, he got a splinter, he got a broken finger, he got a cut here and cut there. And Talmidim always said to him, Rebbe, you know, we'll build a sukkah for you. And he says, Chas v'shalom, you can help me. But Chas v'shalom, I'm not giving up this mitzvah for anything in the world. I don't care if I get a splinter or a brick. So I feel in good company because I'm I'm similar to him. With my first name, you'd think I'd have two right hands, and I don't. So, so we had to build Sukkot in the desert. Okay, what else are we going to do? We build Sukkot. That's it. And that's a chag. We make a whole to-do about sleeping in the desert in huts. In huts. I think they call it booths. Don't they call them booths in old English? Like JPS or something? I sleep in booths. I sleep in a sukkah. Where else am I going to sleep? That's the chag. So I'd like to spend the rest of the time trying to understand the meaning of the chag according to Rabbi Akiva, who says Sukkot Mamash is what we are celebrating. Thank you again. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam shehakol nieh bidvaro. Anyway, the Aruch HaShulchan. The Aruch HaShulchan in Simon Taf Reish Chaf Hei. The Aruch HaShulchan, Rabbi Chiel Michel Epstein, who died only about 100 years ago. Rabbi Chiel Michel Epstein has a very interesting explanation as to what this opinion is. V'ainyan kein hu. D'bipnei zeh nitztavinu la'asot sukkot. Dugmat ha-sukkot she'asu lahem b'midbar. This is the reason why we have to build Sukkot the way they had in the desert. Kedei she'it galev it parseim mitoch mitzvat ha-sukkah godel ma'alatan shel Yisrael b'midbar. This is a celebration of B'nai Yisrael in the desert. Godel ma'alatan, their high level. Second line, Shayu Holchin im Koved Ha'anashim Ba'anashim Be'atach. They went with a large men, women, children, Rivei Rivavot. Tens of thousands. B'makom Asher Ein B'teva Adam Liyotbo. Normal humans cannot live in the desert. One, two people cannot. 2 million. Kemoshe Ida Katuv, like the Torah tells us, Lo mikom zera, it's in Bamidbar Chaf. One thing is a footnote, and nothing happens overnight. I don't know the answer to the following question, and maybe you can help me. We'll think about this together. I don't have an answer. But it's fascinating that this pasuk that the Aruch HaShulchan quotes and the next one, that's in Parshat Chukat. Lo mikom zera. Right? You took us to a desert, into a place where there's no plants, no vegetation. What I don't understand, I mean, I know that about the desert. Of all the places, of all the psukim that the Aruch HaShulchan can quote, I would have thought to quote, Lech Techar Charay Bamidbar. Not only is this it makes sense, this pasuk, but this is the pasuk that is being said by people. Anybody? Complaining about the Midbar. He's telling us that we should be praising and thinking about B'nai Yisrael, who went to the desert and are complaining. There's a footnote, by the way. I don't have an answer. I have a thought, but I'm still thinking about it. I think that that's exactly the pshat. That he's, and the next pasuk too. Hold on 1 second. V'chein amar ha-navi li-Yisrael ha-midbar ha-yiti li-Yisrael im eretz me'apelya. I'm a desert, says Hashem. Did I bring you to a desert? It's also in this pasuk Hashem is responding to complaints. And I don't know, but I think that the reason perhaps is davka that it's a complainable place. It's a place where people can complain. And yet the vast majority did not. But I'm not sure that's an answer. Anyway, klomar debamidbar hechanti lahem kol davar. Velo chasru davar. They didn't not miss a thing. They didn't need to go to the bathroom. And they had food. And they had water. And they had protection. And they had shade. And they had protection from the elements and protection from enemies. Ukamo she'amar Moshe Rabbeinu beparshat Devarim yada lechtecha et hamidbar hagadol hazeh zeh 40 shana Hashem elokecha imach lo chasarta davar. That pasuk is Hashem praising Bnei Israel. Anyway, v'nimtza, third to last line. The ikar mitzvah zu hu zikaron hamasa hagadol shebamidbar. The message of this chag, says the Aruch HaShulchan, is this reminding us of this huge masa, the huge tiul, this huge journey that Bnei Yisrael took in the desert, shelavad shelo haya makom zera, od afilu batim kvuin lo haya sham, not even houses, ela sukot bi'alma, they were plain old sukot. The lazer nitzdavenu la'asot sukot dugmatan, and that's why we were commanded to create and to build a sukot like that. Lema'an nizkor godel ma'alatenu mehashgachat Hashem aleinu me'acharei yitziat Mitzrayim. The Chag, according to the Aruch HaShulchan, is a commemoration and a celebration of emuna in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and not theoretical but practical. Our ancestors left Mitzrayim. It was bad to be in Mitzrayim, but at least you were alive, at least you got food. Here, who knows, we're all going to die. And many people did complain, and many people died. But it's a commemoration of how great Bnei Yisrael was to follow Hashem. And that's the Aruch HaShulchan. What I'd like to do is go along those lines, but a little bit deeper, and let's see if there's something more to that. So we're gonna call this question number one. We're going to call this question number one, what is the nature of Chag HaSukkot according to Rabbi Akiva, who says Sukkot Mamash? Question number two. The Torah actually gives another reason for the holiday of Sukkot. We celebrate Sukkot not only for the historical reason, the 40-year experience in the Midbar, but the Torah relates Sukkot to the agricultural cycle as well. Take a look in Parshat Mishpatim. V'chag ha-katsir. Bikurei ma'asecha asher tizra basadeh. V'chag ha-asif. That's Sukkot. B'tzeit ha-shana b'ospecha at ma'asecha min hasadeh. That's Parshat Mishpatim. Parshat Emor. Ach, b'chamisha asar yom l'chodesh ha-shvi'i. B'ospechem et tfuat ha-aretz. Again, chag ha-asif. Tachogu Chag Hashem Shivat Yamim Bayom HaRishon Shabbaton Uvayom HaShmini Shabbaton. The fact that Sukkot has an agricultural connection, a connection to the agricultural cycle, should not come as any surprise. All the Chagim are like that. But the question is, specifically about Sukkot, is there a connection between these two? Is there a connection between the agricultural cycle and the Lema'an Yedu Dorotechem Ki Basukoto Shavti B'nei Yisrael Bo'otziyotam Me'eretz Mitzrayim? Question number three. And this is something that when I came in today, I said to you, a guten kvittel. A kvittel is a... What does a kvittel mean? It means a little note. A little note. And that wish reflects a certain fascinating dichotomy about Chag HaSukkot. Because on the one hand, Chag HaSukkot is a full member of the Shalosh Regalim category. And on the other hand, Sukkot also has a foot in the Yamim Noraim cycle. For example, on the one, I mean, the fact that Sukkot is one of the Shalosh Regalim is clear. The davening is almost identical to Sukkot, to Pesach and Shavuot. The mitzvah of Aliyah LaRegel, the way we daven, the way we make Kiddush, the constant reminder of Zecher Yitziat Mitzrayim. So it's one of the Shalosh Regalim. Shalosh Regalim. On the other hand, Sukkot clearly has a place in the Yamim Noraim cycle. So for example, this is the strongest example. What do we say every day at Sukkot, including Shabbat? Hoshana lemancha Elokeinu. Hoshana. If you dropped from another planet right now and I started saying Hoshana lemancha Elokeinu, you'd think it was 5 minutes before the end of Ne'ilah. And we're very happy in the whole parade and the lulav and the etrog and the hakafot, and that's Simchat Torah. But Hoshana lemancha boreinu, and read the words, not just the first four, lemancha goaleinu, lemancha dorshenu, but read all the words of each one of the Hoshanot. We're davening to Hashem, save us. We don't say that on Pesach. We don't say Hoshanot on Shavuot. What Megillah do we read on Sukkot? Kohelet! Kohelet is a Megillah with such blatant overtones related to introspection, related to the meaning of life. If I had told you, and this is, if I had told you that we read Kohelet at Mincha on Yom Kippur, you would not blink. You would say, oh, of course, Kohelet is part of the Yamim Narayim. Maybe Shabbos Shuva, we should have read Kohelet, but Kohelet's read on Sukkot. Did we stop saying L'David Hashem last night? We stopped saying HaMelech HaKadosh. We stopped saying Micha Mocha. HaMelech HaMishpat. Avinu Malkeinu. The David Hashem goes until the end of Sukkot. The David Hashem Orivi Yishi. We started saying it. It's part of the 40-day process plus 7 of Tshuva. Some of us, myself included, didn't or were unable to say Tashlich and Rosh Hashanah. Until when can I say Tashlich? Till the end of Sukkot. Till the end of Sukkot. Sukkot clearly has 1 foot in the Shalosh Regalim world and 1 foot in the Yamim Narayim world, and we want to understand why. What is the message, the significance of this, so to speak, dual allegiance? And the last question is related to the Haftorah that we're going to be saying on Chol HaMoed Sukkot. And that is the Haftorah that comes from Yechezkel Perek Lamed Chet, which I quoted some of it here. It's really only the beginning, and I would, if you're taking notes, I would put a note on the source sheet, look at the rest of the Haftorah, because I really didn't have space for the whole Haftorah, but I just put the tip of the iceberg. And that is the, we read on Sukkot, Gog Umagog. Gog Umagog, this terribly frightening, but in some ways welcome Chag, war, end of days war. Why is Gog Umagog read on Shabbat Chol HaMoed? So again, we have 4 questions. Question number 1 was, how can we explain the Chag of Sukkot according to Rabbi Akiva, who says Sukkot Mamash? I understand Rabbi Eliezer, but Rabbi Akiva, what does it mean? We heard the Aruch HaShulchan, what is there more? Question number 2, what is the fact? What is the meaning? Which we could, I admit, ask about every Chag, and we should, and do. But what is the significance, what is the meaning behind these, the fact that we have Sukkot for historical reasons, but also Sukkot with agricultural reasons, the agricultural cycle? Question number 3 was, what is the significance of the fact that Sukkot plays a role both in Shalosh Regalim and also Yamim Noraim? And 4th, what connection does the war of Gog Umagog have to do with Sukkot? I'd like to share an answer which is based on ideas that are quoted here and there. Nobody says all of this, but everybody says a part of this, including the Rashbam, the Ramban, Rav Shimshon Rafael Hirsch, the Abarbanel, and one of the Tanakh giants of the world, Rabbi Menachem Liebtag. Imagine a seminary that would have the zuchut that he would teach in that seminary. That's something special to have our Liebtag teach there. So anyway, so it's based on all these people in a variety of ways and places and kind of bringing it together. First of all, it's important to keep in mind that Yitziat Mitzrayim was not an end in itself. It was merely the beginning of Jewish history, or at least as a nation. The national Jewish history is the beginning. There were people who thought it was the end, and they were called the Erev Rav. But we do not believe that Pesach is the beginning and end of our history. There is Yitziat Mitzrayim. There is Matan Torah. There is Knisa LeEretz Yisrael. And there is, of course, the end of days, Acharit HaYamim, Ikvata D'Meshicha, Yemot HaMashiach, etc. From the very beginning, and again, this is in Psukim, and this is hinted in Rashi, and said in Rashi in Perek Gimel and Shemot, but hinted elsewhere. From the beginning, the plan was for Bnei Yisrael to leave Mitzrayim, was in the Midbar, hopefully for only a couple of weeks, to be trained in the plan of B'nai Yisrael serving Hashem, to teach us how to become a nation, how to become a free nation, how to serve God with the Torah, how to express and reflect that service in Eretz Yisrael, and eventually lead to the culmination and perfection of Olam Hazeh. That is Jewish history in one sentence. And it's not only Jewish history, it's Jewish future in one sentence. That was the plan. Yetziat Mitzrayim, train us to be a nation, give us a job, that's called the Torah, give us a job, take that job and you do something with the job. Going to, you know, imagine, and there are people like this, I'm not saying it, but imagine you go to law school and become a lawyer and then never work as a lawyer. That happens. I'm not saying it never happens in the world, but we got a job. It's called the Torah. The Torah was never meant to be spent and to be used and to be reflected and to be shown in the Midbar. It was meant to be shown and reflected and illustrated in the world's capital of Torah and Judaism, and that is in Eretz Yisrael. And while that happens, and to be a Or LaGoyim in this crossroads of the world, and this is soon, I think, right after Sukkot, we're going to hear a beautiful shiur, I'm pretty sure, from Rabbi Liebtag also, about where Eretz Yisrael is situated. Right, Bavel on one side, Mitzrayim on the other, the road between Bavel and Mitzrayim leading straight past our front door. Right, straight here, and if you have something you want to sell, you don't sell it in the middle of nowhere, you buy a storefront property with a lot of people traffic. So we have something we want to sell. It's called Torah. It's called Tzedek. It's called Mishpat. It's called Chesed. So I'm not going to sell that, my wares, in the middle of nowhere. I'm going to sell it on the crossroad between Bavel and Mitzrayim. The world's going back and forth, back and forth. I'm standing right here. And you can look at me. And this is how we act with Tzedek and Mishpat, etc. And that leads eventually to Acharit HaYamim Yimot Mashiach. That is Jewish history in a nutshell. I didn't give you any dates. I didn't give you any people even. That's my favorite Jewish history class. I mean, I like Jewish history, but this would be easier to take a test on. That's it. Pesach was a beginning and a resounding beginning, but only a beginning. So, the beginning teaches us to believe in Hashem, teaches us to take risks in the name of God. And I saw something on Yom Kippur. If anybody has the Koren Machzer on Yom Kippur, anyone have that? Did Rabbi Sachs write the Perush, like the English commentary? If you can, even now, if you can read the commentary that he said, the introduction to Ne'ilah, he talks about taking risks. And B'nai Israel, Jews, take Avram took risks. It's something to read. It's really golden. Anyway, that's Pesach. And then that's not only what happened on Pesach, that is, in other words, on the Chag of Pesach, but that is what happened to us as a nation on Pesach. And that led us, 7 weeks later, after we were trained somewhat, and we got Mara, three mitzvot, and finally we get to Chag HaShavuot. And Chag HaShavuot says, okay, I'm going to take this nation, and I have something to do for this nation. That's Chag HaShavuot. And then we come to the Chag of Rabbi Akiva. And that Chag is called Sukkot. And that Chag is the experience in the desert. It is the last of this phase. It is the preparation for life in Eretz Yisrael. Now, until we got the Chag HaSukkot, until we got the Sukkot Mamash, according to Rabbi Akiva, And in a lot of ways, in the desert itself, we saw Hashem in one way. God supernatural, God of miracles. And I know this is a repeat for Shana Bet, so I'm going to say this at least two or three more times this year, because this really summarizes a lot of things, and that's normal. I'll tell you something based on Rav Kook. Based on Rav Kook, Rav Kook says this in Ein Aya and Brachot Daf Yud. Ein Aya is his Perush on Agadata and Brachot and Shabbat. So in Masechet Brachot Daf Yud, Rav Kook says this, but then I also heard it later from Rav Yoel Bin Nun, who is a giant also of Tanakh. The example that he gives is as follows. Rav Kook called B'nai Yisrael, when they left Mitzrayim, a baby. A baby. And we grew up in the desert. we grew up in the desert. What does that mean, we grew up in the desert? It means that when you're a baby, who took AP Psych? What is, I have took it, but I took it in a couple decades ago, even more than a couple. What is object permanence? Don't worry, I'm not going to test you. You remember? Yeah.
It's not like you're a baby, you think that you can't see something that doesn't exist.
Outstanding.
But when you get older, you know that, like, even if you don't see it, it still
exists. Outstanding. Is that a 5? AP, the highest score is a 5, right?
Yeah.
I give you a 5. That's great. That's easy. So far, so we've taken Jewish history, everyone a 5. AP Psych, everyone a 5. Object permanence means that when you're a little baby, when you can't see something, it's as if it doesn't exist. Which is why, Imit Hashem by all of you, when you have a little baby and you have to put him or her to sleep, and you leave the room, they start crying. And it breaks your heart, and I still remember very clearly, my little baby is 21 years old, but I remember leaving, and my wife and I, having to close the door and standing outside the door, going, should we go in, should we not go in, should we go in, should we go in? She's crying, we have to let her, we can't. But it's so painful. Why? Because somewhere, the mommy doesn't exist. Right now, doesn't exist because the door was closed, and so she doesn't exist. And she comes back in. Wow, unbelievable! She exists. I actually saw something. This is related to something I speak about on Tisha B'Av. I don't remember if I said it to some of you in some of the camps, but it's when I visited this summer. But there's a YouTube clip of a British man whose name I cannot remember right now, who is cursed, mamash cursed, by an illness that his memory, I think, is 30 seconds long. You saw this? Did I say it? 30 seconds long. And it's tragic because he remembers nothing except how to play piano and his wife. The only person he remembers is his wife. So you'll be talking to him and he'll say, well, no one ever visited me. There's no doctor. This is a terrible hospital because no one ever visited me. Someone could have visited him 3 minutes ago and he totally forgot. He goes to a restaurant, and of course he doesn't remember he's ever been there. And of course, he doesn't remember what he ordered. He certainly doesn't remember what he ordered because it was ordered 5 minutes ago. But he ordered, if I'm not mistaken, he ordered like chicken and broccoli. And when the waiter comes back, so of course he doesn't remember it's his, but he doesn't even know what chicken tastes like or broccoli tastes like. He doesn't know that he likes it. We remember, we see chicken, we like it or not like it. Broccoli, we like it or don't like it. He doesn't remember. She has to say to him, you like it. And he says, okay, and he'll eat it. What's heartwarming and sad at the same time is that every single time he sees his wife, it's as if he hasn't seen her in 20 or 30 years. And you'll see him on video. She walks in the room. She could have been there all along, and she went to the bathroom. She comes back 3 minutes later. He stands up like he hasn't seen her. He hugs her, kisses her. It's very heartwarming and tragic at the same time. In one of the videos, I don't know if you've ever been interviewed, but when you're interviewed, let's say for a thing, the camera's all set up and they check the angles and they check the sound, and so they're talking to him and so it's all perfect and he has the microphone like under his shirt and right here, and all of a sudden apparently, you know, the wife walks in to the studio while he's being interviewed. So if you haven't seen your wife in 20, 30 years, I don't care if the camera's on you. He stands up and the microphone kind of, because he has to see his wife, and he kisses her and hugs her. Again, it's heartwarming and tragic at the same time. In many ways, that's what a baby goes through. Now, that's why we can play peekaboo with a little baby. You walk over and you say, peekaboo, and it's very cute because you don't exist. Oh, out of nowhere, it's a surprise party every single time. It's beautiful. If I did that to you, I was about to say you wouldn't laugh, but I guess you did. So if I did that to someone, you know, usually if I do peekaboo once, it's funny because it's kind of weird. At some point, you're going to start laughing at me, not with me. Because Baruch Hashem, we are healthy in that we recognize that when something is not here, it still exists. It's just not in front of me this moment. And says Rav Cook and says Rav Yoel Binun in explaining this, that is what Bnei Yisrael did in a healthy, healthy way. They were babies, spiritually. So Hashem exists when the man comes down, Hashem exists. When the Yam Suf splits, Hashem exists. When the Makot come, Hashem exists. But all the questions that we have in Bamidbar and in Shmot, how could Bnei Yisrael forget Hashem so fast? How could a baby forget its mother so fast? The answer is when you're developing a relationship with God, that's what happens. There is no God if I don't see a miracle this moment. However, it is natural, just like in human events, and at human developments, if you still think that, for example, Rabbi Felberman is speaking next, he's not in the room right now. Does he exist? Of course he exists. If anybody thought he didn't, it would be a problem psychologically. If a nation at some point doesn't recognize that God exists when he's not doing a miracle that moment, if they don't recognize that, that's a danger, it's a problem. As a matter of fact, that's how Rabbi Noon explains Parshat Chukat, Mei Meriva. It was Moshe's job to bring the Mateh, but don't hit the rock. You did that already in Sefer Shemot. Don't hit the rock this time. Talk to the rock. It's a new level. First there's hitting, then there's talking, and then there's rain with just you and me in a few days with Tefillat Geshem, and Hashem brings the rain. I know Hashem exists. Please, Hashem, bring the rain. And that's when Hashem realized, in quotes, that Moshe Rabbeinu was part of an old generation, the generation of babies. And that can't be the same person who brings Bnei Yisrael into Eretz Yisrael. And that leads us back to Sukkot. The 40-year experience in the desert was a growing up, a maturing process of a baby growing to have the cognitive awareness and psychological development and spiritual development that Hashem exists even when he doesn't bring miracles. And Rav Kook actually says, and the Ramban says this also, in many, many places in Chumash, the Ramban says that bringing miracles was a lower level. Here we go again. I have to go back. I thought you were older. Okay, I guess you're younger. I guess you're not yet developed spiritually. I have to come back and bring them on. Okay, no problem. I have to come back. And by the way, this may explain the first two wars in Eretz Yisrael. I and Yericho. Yericho and I. Yericho had this combination of human intervention and HaKadosh Baruch Hu miraculously, and I, totally human. Obviously, everything's from God. But, and it didn't work the first time, did it? So, Sukkot is the chag of transition. Transition, growing up, development. And there will be one day, no more man. And there will be no more Be'er Miriam. And there will be no more leveling out of mountains and valleys. And there will be no more protecting our feet from blisters. And there will be far, far fewer blatant miracles. Once in a while, I'm going to have to come out of hiding and show you, yes, I do exist. Sometimes you need a little booster shot. Appreciate it. I understand that. But primarily, we are graduating. We're moving on to a higher level where God exists even when I don't see him blatantly. And Eretz Yisrael is to represent, and again that goes back to Chukat, Mei Meriva, Moshe, Eretz Yisrael represents that higher level of entering Eretz Yisrael, God behind the scenes, God who knows all, sees all, is in control, is involved. I just don't see him, unless I know where to look. I actually had an interesting experience, my wife and I were in the process of buying a car. So we were taking it for a test drive with the salesman, and he was telling us a story, and I said, this is a Musser Schmooze right there. This is a Musser Schmooze. We were driving a car, and my wife said to him, I think we were looking at a whatever car, and my wife said, her name is Joy, you all know her. So Joy said, this seems like a nice car, but I've never seen this car. In Israel, sometimes the same cars that exist in Chutz Laaretz, just the different names. So I said, I've never seen this car. So he said, I'll tell you a funny story. The salesman. He said he had a woman who was taking a test drive, and he was taking her for a test drive in a car called the Suzuki Splash. Have you ever heard of that car before? Ever seen that car? Is it in England? Oh, okay. Where I am originally from, I don't remember ever seeing it, and I'm here for a number of years, and I never saw it. I don't think I ever saw it. So this woman's driving, she says, I love this car. I've never seen a Suzuki Splash. So maybe I'm the only one in the world. You know, it can't be a good car if nobody sees it. So they were stopped at a red light, and he says, well, look at the car in front of you. What kind of car is that? And she looks, and she goes, Suzuki Splash. He goes, look at the car to your right. I'm sorry, look at the car behind you. What car is that? Suzuki Splash. While he was talking to us, the car next to us, he goes, look at that car. We look at it, Suzuki Splash. He says it's everywhere once you start looking for it. If you look for it, it's there. And the truth is now every time I see a Suzuki Splash, I go, aha. But I said, you know what? We didn't buy it, we were looking. But that's HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If you know where to look, he's everywhere. If you don't know where to look, he's nowhere to be found. He's not in the moon, he's not in the sun, he's not in beautiful plants, he's not in jeans, he's not, nothing. He's not in the birth of a child and the planting of a cucumber, nowhere. But if you know where to look, he's in every one of those places, of course, and everywhere else. Anyway, that was what Sukkot is supposed to be. That is what Sukkot is supposed to be in the Chag. Rabbi Akiva's Chag of Sukkot, yes, it's a Chag. It's because Hashem made regular, everyday, run-of-the-mill huts. And it was Hashem who made them. I thought I said I did. I thought I had to chop. I thought I told you I got splinters all the time. It's Hashem. Do you think it's me? It's Hashem. That is what a chag is, according to Rabbi Akiva. That's what we celebrate. It's a plain, old, regular day. Cause for celebration. That explains our second question. We said, what is the significance of the fact that Sukkot has historical and agricultural significance? At the end of the natural, physical, so to speak, normal agricultural cycle, I can finally, getting ready for the winter, I can finally, Chag HaAsif, take in all my produce, and I can fill up my goren up to the top. My bank account is full, my refrigerator is full, everything is great, and I can sit back and say, look what I did. And the opposite, we say, Chas v'shalom. What do you mean, look what you did? It's an opportunity for us to say, look what Hashem does. Which is why Sukkot, and we have so many Divrei Torah, why Sukkot now? It should be Sukkot in the beginning of Pesach. Sukkot's the beginning of the winter in Israel. We're going to start davening for rain. We need rain. With all the great technologies in the world, and there are great technologies, with all the great technologies that B'nai Yisrael have invented over the years, as recently as last Thursday that I told you about. HaKadosh Baruch Hu does it all. We say, Kochi v'otzem yadi, God forbid, it's all God. So yes, at the end of this cycle, we say, I remind myself, Chag HaAsif, no. It's God. God does it all. It's very easy to fall into the trap, because that's what Sukkot is about. Sukkot is the normal, the natural, the plain old, putting a seed in the ground, and a seed comes out, and it's still God. God does not only exist at Kriyat Yam Suf, he exists at the planting of a cucumber bush, tree, plant. We also asked in question 3, what was the significance of the fact that Chag HaSukkot belongs to both Shalosh Regalim and Yamim Noraim? This message, the message that is a complete recognition of God's hand in all, is a central theme of tshuva and a central theme of Yamim Noraim. Less than 24 hours ago, look at the next source. Uvechein tein pachtacha Hashem. Look, you said these words. Uvechein tein pachtacha Hashem Elokeinu al kol maasecha ve'imatcha al kol shebarata v'yiraucha kol ha'maasim v'yeda kol pa'ul ki ata pe'alto v'yavin kol yitzur ki ata yitzarto. One of the central themes of Yamim Noraim is we want us and we want the world to recognize and appreciate that God is in control. And that is, of course, a prerequisite to tshuva. If I'm in control, I have no reason to do tshuva. God should do tshuva to me because I have so many problems. Chalila, chalila, v'chalila, the opposite. I do tshuva because I recognize, finally, as the gates were closing, Hashem Hu Elokim. Hashem Hu Elokim. As a matter of fact, Rav Meidan, one of the Rashi Yeshiva of Gush and the Talmud of one of our teachers, or at least a Shana Bet teacher, Rav Fuchs, Rav Meidan tells us, he says, he talked about on Yonah that we read on Yom Kippur, he said that Sukkot is the actualization of what we said 12 hours ago, 16 hours ago. Hashem Hu Elokim. Hashem Hu Elokim. Oh yeah? Go out of your house. Let's see you do it. You believe Hashem is Elokim? Go out of your house. Leave the roof. Leave the comfort of your walls, the solid walls, the solid roof. Hashem Hu Elokim? Go for it. Let's see. It's the actualization. It's the realization. Eat in the sukkah. Sleep in the sukkah. Live in the sukkah. Hashem Hu Elokim. That's what Sukkot is. Sukkot mamash. I don't have clouds outside of my house. I have regular schach. Hashem's in control. This is also, by the way, a very interesting distinction. between Pesach and Sukkot, which are mirrors, and we'll talk about this later in the year, right? The Gemara often compares the 15th of Tishrei and the 15th of Nisan. The Gemara learns one from the other very often. It's a limud in the Gemara called Tevav Tevav. 15th. Pesach, Sukkot. It's a mirror. It's right, the opposite ends of the year. 6 months, exactly. Pesach lasted, the events that we celebrate, moments. It's a flash. That's what Sukkot, Sukkot? I meant Pesach. Pesach is a flash. Miracle. You better hold on to it in some way. How do you hold on to it? Sukkot, one chag, celebrates the events of 40 years. That's what this is about. It's a 40-year chag. That's what Judaism is about. It's slow. It's arduous. It's challenging. It's ups and downs. Pesach is a flash because miracles take a moment. But in order for them to last, we need Sukkot to solidify it. And that's why, for example, Sukkot is the way we live, and we don't only want... Pesach is a Jewish chag. Sukkot, of course, is a Jewish chag also. But as I mentioned a few minutes ago, Sukkot, we bring Shivim Parim. Shivim Parim Keneged the Shivim Umot HaOlam. This is when they bring their own korbanot. And so the Yamim Noraim and Tshuva is all about us wanting the whole world. That's what Sukkot is. The whole world to come to Hashem and to recognize Hashem Hu Elokim. V'yamar b'yom ahu hinei Elokeinu zeh. Everyone's going to say that. Aya Hashem Echad u'Shmo Echad. It's going to happen in the future. And we want not just a flash. Pesach, by the way, not only is a flash, but the way we celebrate Pesach is a flash. We do so many strange things on Pesach that children say, Mani Shtana, why is it different? I don't normally act like this because miracles are not normal. They don't last. And how do you convey that? You convey that in Sukkot. Teshvu ke'en taduru. It's the flip side of Pesach. Pesach, I don't live like that. I don't lean at the table unless it's Friday night really late. You know what I mean? That, then maybe we lean. But usually we don't lean. Matzah, once a year if I'm lucky. I hope we don't, you know, leftover matzah maybe for another week. But not Bal Tosef, Chas V'Shalom. But Sukkot is Teshvu Kein Taduru. You want to talk to your spouse? Do it in the sukkah. You want to play with your children? In the sukkah. You want to schmooze in the sukkah, eat in the sukkah, sleep in the sukkah. Because that's life. It's regular life. It's plain old life. But plain old life is the celebration. It's the celebration of Sukkot. And lastly, we asked, why would Gog u'Magog be the appropriate chag, haftorah for this chag? Rav Hirsch wrote a lot. But on Chumash, he wrote 6 volumes. 5 on the Chamisha Chumshei Torah, and there's a 6th volume on Haftorot. And take a look at what he writes on the Haftorah for Sukkot. He says as follows, Gog u'Magog. There's going to be, again, on the one hand, we're petrified. On the other hand, we want it to happen. This ultimate war, painful. And it's going to be Gog u'Magog. It's going to be us against them. And who are we fighting? Says Rav Hirsch in Kedarko Bakodesh, who always plays beautifully with language. What is the philosophy of the them? Gog. Sounds like? Gog. Sounds like Gog. It is a philosophy which says if I bunker myself down with enough cement and enough metal and enough locks, I am going to be fine and Hashem can do nothing to me. Hashem can do nothing to me. I'm basically fine. Sure, God can hurt me maybe outside, but inside I can have my own roof. I can create a world of roofs. And we are the sukkah people. We are the sukkah people who believe that even when we're sitting in a strong building with walls and everything, it's Hashem who is keeping them up. It's Hashem who's reminding us that He's in charge and we are vulnerable. Now, we don't always feel it. We don't always feel it. On we'll talk about this perhaps after we come back, but there is a very strange Rashi. When Rashi is explaining Pazar Kashav, the 6 ways that Shmini Atzeret is different than Sukkot, that's a unique chag, Rashi says that on Shmini Atzeret we go back into the house. What kind of Rashi is that? Go back in the house. Of course you go back in the house when the mitzvah's over. You know, he doesn't say we stop shaking a lulav. He doesn't say that the day after Pesach is different because we stop eating matzah. The difference of Shmini Atzeret is that we go back in the house. That we take the message and the lessons of Sukkot and bring them into the house. You bring them into the house. That even when we're sitting here, Sukkot, like all Chagim, are intended to inspire us all year round. But Sukkot, according to Rabbi Akiva, this is all Rabbi Akiva, is the plain old, run-of-the-mill, mundane, Korban Tamir, Etakeves Echata Sababoker, even in your house. There's really, really no roof. You think there is, but it's Schach. This is Schach. And this is Schach. Everything's Schach. Everything comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and at His will, Chalila v'Chalila, it can come down. That's always fascinating that September 11th comes out near Sukkot. It reminds us that the strongest of strong, it's what Hashem wants. And Sukkot is the reminder of that Chag. And so let us hope, B'mirtz Hashem, that the forward-looking vision of Sukkot and the idea of total reliance on HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the recognition that He controls all will serve B'mirtz Hashem as a positive lesson for us over the days preparatory to Chag, on Chag itself, and afterwards. And that B'mirtz Hashem we will daven that the promises of the Haftorah that we read will be a harbinger, B'mirtz Hashem, for the coming final phase, B'mirtz Hashem, of Biat Mashiach Tzidkenu.